Human Services in the...
Wake up, everyone. It's time for a call to action. Welcome to Call to Action Today, where there are no sacred cows, with your host, Steve Noble, just an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and he's calling you out every week to live the Christian life in your home, your work, and even in politics. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH, or check him out online at c2atoday.org. And now, with some much-needed cough medicine for the church, here's your host, Steve Noble.
So I assume you're comfortable, familiar with, have heard the old saying, ideas have consequences. But here's a little twist on this. How about ideas have unintended consequences? So today on Theology Thursday with our friends at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, we're going to talk about an idea that has had unintentional and unintended consequences, and that's the idea of individualism. Now, this is not necessarily unique to the American experience, but certainly individualism has been a big part of the American experience and the American experiment. Individualism really kind of flows out of liberty. And then you have rugged individualism, right, which is how the West was won. It's how we conquered the rest of the contiguous 50 states of the United States. And so that rugged individualism, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, that's good. I think most of us can agree with that. Until you factor in what Jesus said, love your neighbor as yourself. And so, okay, I got to balance my rugged individualism and trying to take care of myself with being a good neighbor and a member of a society. That's why we had the 13 colonies became the United States. They were independent, yet collaborative. And so rugged individualism moves forward, individualism, and then bring it up into the modern era in the last, let's say, 20 years. And I think we could all agree that individualism has kind of, we've gone from rugged individualism to individualism gone wild. And so now you've gotten, I think through social media and the internet, this me generation, right? Which is self-centered, all that kind of stuff, kids versus parents, all of that. But now we've gone even further where rugged individualism, hyper individualism, now everything is just a matter of your interpretation, whether it's your race, like Rachel Dolezal, the NAACP gal who's now almost homeless up in the state of Washington, who's a white gal, but she decides one day that she just relates more to the African-American group, so she just considers herself African-American. Or you want to change, well, that may be your definition of marriage, but it's not my definition of marriage. And then, of course, now we have transgenderism. Well, I don't feel like a girl or I don't feel like a boy, so your gender is based on your feelings. And so where does that stop? Where does this hyper-individualism stop? And where did it get started in the first place? So we're going to be in the world of history and philosophy today, and a great person to help us guide down that road, which is a difficult one, Dr. Ivan Spencer, who's been on the show before, professor of history and philosophy out here at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. Ivan, how are you?
Hey, doing great, Steve. Good to be with you today.
Great to have you on. And the last time you were here, I think we were quoting Nietzsche.
That's right. You know, we're talking about the tweetable Nietzsche.
Yeah, that was great. That was a great conversation. But today, this kind of hyper-individualism, why is this on your radar screen as a professor?
Well, I see the effects of hyper-individualism everywhere I look. And it just seems that a lot of the chaos and the confusion and anomie in our culture today is stemming from this vast expansion or overexpansion, or as you called it, individualism gone wild in our culture today. And so there are many, many different examples of how individualism has gone to a point of, well, insanity.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned a couple there, you know, the gender issues where, you know, you can wake up and be a different gender today and switch back tomorrow, whatever you want to be. It's up to you. You can define yourself and your own nature. And this also, I think, probably the most grave example of this would be with abortion, where what is it that makes the human being in the womb a human? Well, in the eyes of our society today, it's the choice of a person, the mother. It's her choice that decides whether this is a human being or not.
Right.
So individuals are given vast powers, and of course the technology that we have, we can globally communicate instantaneously now. We've vastly expanded the powers of individualism. Sure, there's some innocent expansions of individualism, but there's also a lot of grave things, powers that we've given individuals, and it just seems like it is headed towards anarchy and and confusion.
Well, yeah. Yeah, confusion, definitely, because now, I mean, I was just looking at something yesterday. Planned Parenthood, of all places, has got some guidance out there, some materials that they've made available on how to talk about gender and sexual promiscuity and sexual exploration down to kindergartners. So now all of a sudden they're defining this rugged individualism and this hyper individualism as, hey, you know, well, I think it's important that I think being the operative words, I think it's important that my kindergarten learn about, well, different genders. And just because Johnny has a penis doesn't mean Johnny's a boy.
Right.
And it's just, yeah, we've gone to anarchy.
Yeah. And so, you know, how far is this going to go? Is this going to continue to accelerate? Because it has accelerated in the past, say, couple of decades with all the, you know, the things that we've seen.
Sure.
Is it going to continue to accelerate, or is it going to reach a point where it can just no longer be sustained? Will a pendulum come back, or, you know, will it lead to some kind of anarchy?
Well, what do you think has been obviously we have social media and everybody being able to kind of go out there and chime off on what they believe to be true. But as we look at kind of human nature, as we think theologically and look at history, what do you think's contributed to this? Because obviously individualism has been around for a long time. We've been kind of into ourselves mm-hmm. since the Garden of Eden.
Yeah.
But when do you think and why do you think it's been really taken off in the last, I think, 20, 30 years?
Yeah. Well, we're at the end of a long development that started about 700 years ago. And I'm going to talk about a movement today that probably most people have not heard of, and it's called nominalism. And also one of its spinoffs, or another movement that took some strength from nominalism in the era of the Renaissance, called humanism. And so around 1320, there was a guy named William of Ockham. And Ockham had some unique ideas. Now, he wasn't the first one to have these ideas, but he's certainly the one to popularize them at that time and make them viable, and also to make them popular.
So William Ockham, is this the Ockham's razor guy?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. And Ockham's razor basically says that you should not unnecessarily expand steps or ideas in a system. So, for example, if I gave two people a math problem and one of them completed it in 3 steps and the other one took 15 steps, the one that completed in 3 steps would have had a simpler system.
Right.
So simplify everything as much as possible. Yeah. So the razor cut away the unnecessary.
Got it. So we're talking about hyper-individualism. We're going to go back in time, look at nominalism, and look at how did we get into this place today where, based on your feelings, you can define reality however you want. Obviously, that's a major issue today, which is why we're talking about it on Theology Thursday. We'll be right back. Back at Steve Noble. It's Call to Action Radio. It is Theology Thursday, as it is every week, with our friends at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. We've been doing this about, I think, almost about 4 years now, so every Thursday. And then once school starts back up, which is pretty soon, Dr. Danny Aiken, who's the president of the seminary, will be on. He's on once a month, and then the other Thursdays, we have other professors involved today. Dr. Ivan Spencer, who's he and I have been friends for a while, went to church together, and he's been a professor of history and philosophy out here at Southeastern for a while, talking about this idea of hyper-individualism. We had rugged individualism. I think that was largely good for the country. Individualism as a sense of liberty and kind of outflow of that from our founding fathers and our type of just our Western way of life. But then you get into this, I think in the modern context, Ivan, I start thinking about, well, when did all this kind of really hyper-individualism start? I mean, in the modern era, I'd go back to the 60s. Mm-hmm. But you're talking about something that started 700 years ago as we look at nominalism. And then eventually this is going to take us to another ism, which we'll make sure we explain mm-hmm. these terms along the way, nihilism. But we have to go back 700 years to really see the seed of all of this.
Yes. So about 700 years ago, William of Ockham began to teach and propagate the ideas of nominalism. In fact, it was right about 700 years ago because he started teaching it at Oxford in 1317. And so nominalist ideas essentially stormed Europe after that time. It grew very rapidly. By the time we get up to Martin Luther, he had adopted nominalist views.
Now, how would you define nominalism?
Okay, that's one of the things we've got to get into. What the word nominalism itself means that there are no universals and that everything is just a name. Okay, so there are no universal concepts that are real. Therefore, everything is a social convention in a sense. The names that we construct are not what things really are. That's just the name that we gave it. Okay, so to understand what that means, you have to go back to the school of thought that he's criticizing, that he's breaking away from. And this is the medieval synthesis, the idea of that comes out of Thomas Aquinas, and the idea that you can have a unity of faith and reason. That faith and reason are unified because all truth is God's truth.
Right.
Okay. So Occam came along, he overemphasized divine omnipotence. He took the idea of divine omnipotence and made that the central core trait of God, the central attribute of God, and overemphasized it to the point where God could do anything, and God basically has the power to specially create everything, and therefore there are no universal concepts even within God's mind that he has created. So the consequence of this was to separate, this is the unintended consequence, was to separate faith and reason so that the world of reason, the world of rationality that human beings have by which we understand this world, is not going to overlap with faith. And so the medieval synthesis of faith and reason gets destroyed at this point. There's a divorce that takes place. And that divorce of faith and reason continues all the way down until today and actually has become more of like a hostility toward faith and reason.
Well, we see that all over the culture, and that's not just Western culture. You see that all over the world.
Yes. And so anyway, what he was saying was that there are no universal ideas, therefore nothing really has a nature. Everything is just a special creation. Everything is basically just a one-off. You and I are just one-offs in the sense we don't share a human nature. Anyway, we call ourselves humans, but that's just a name that we've given, just like we might give the name apples to all the things that look the same, but there is nothing there that really ties all apples together or all humans. Now, sure, in the case of apples and all that's significant, but when you get to human nature and other things, it begins to have weighty consequences. And
so human nature goes out the window, which means your human nature now becomes completely negotiable. Is that right?
Well, I don't think Occam intended it that way.
Right, that's the unintended consequence.
I mean, he was a Franciscan monk, and he thought he was doing Christianity a favor, and he was actually trying to insulate faith from the ravages of reason. And so, but one of the consequences is that now reason is going to focus entirely on the particulars, and that is the particular details of every individual. Okay, not just individual people, but individual facts, anything that could be studied. So it's a focus on the minute details of this world. And that's going to be a necessary precursor for modernism and the birth of modern science. Of course, this is about 300 years before science,
right,
you know, ignites and becomes a focused movement. But nevertheless, it was a necessary precursor, a necessary ingredient. And so what this does is we don't focus on the universals, on what the nature of something is.
So there's no meta-narrative. There's no overarching basis of truth.
No.
Yeah, no. That's the problem.
Yeah. So there is no transcendent truth anymore.
Right,
there
right.
are only particular concrete truths here and now in this world. And so this is a move towards empiricism as well. How am I going to know these concrete particulars around me? Well, through the senses and so forth and so on. And so there are no metaphysical natures that anything has. Now, I hope you can see the connection. Now, it took many, many centuries for us to get here, but
right.
I hope you can see the connection. We now live in an anti-essentialist age. That is, nothing has an essence.
Right.
Masculinity has no essence. Femininity has no essence.
And to propose that there is met with hostility.
Yes.
Men are this way. Women are this way. And in our culture today, in the Western world especially, that's offensive. Because you're making truth claims, and you're saying these are overarching meta-narrative truths. I mean, these are true whether you like them or not.
Right.
And that doesn't meet with a lot of applause anymore.
Right. And so now in this age of hyper-individualism, it's no, I get to pick. I get to choose. I'm the one that decides what it, you know, what something is and what I am. And I can identify to be whatever I want.
Yeah.
And so this is the end of the road, so to speak, of this idea.
And certainly that was not what Occam was up to.
No, that was not his intention.
Which is why we're calling it an unintended consequence.
Absolutely. That was not his intent. He had no idea how this was going to work itself out and unravel down here where we are.
Yeah.
But here we are 700 years, and we're in a world where nothing has an essence, and therefore nothing has a nature, and anything can be whatever we want it to be.
Yeah, which is now we're in, reason is now anarchy. Because there is no ultimate reason. There's just anarchy.
Yeah.
Now you redefine the terms, and you mentioned this earlier, that one of the big ones, well, in 1973, we redefine and leave it up to the individual as to whether that thing, quote-unquote thing, in your stomach is just a clump of cells. Is it part of you? It's like your appendix. You can have it removed and destroyed if you want. And that was, I think, in the modern era, one of the most prolific manifestations of this. Is that, hey, you call it a baby, I'm just calling it whatever, it's some cells, and if I want to expend it, get rid of it, I can.
Yeah.
And that's on an individual basis. You
right.
decide, is that a baby you want?
Right.
Or is it a problem you don't want?
Right.
And you act accordingly.
And I think this is where one of the cultural clashes comes between the secular world and the Christian world, and that is that Christians still have this idea that things have an essence because God gave them an essence. And therefore, things are what they are, regardless of your opinion.
Yeah, that's right. And we don't like that either, especially hyper-individualism. What do you mean, regardless of my opinion, when I think the only thing that matters is my opinion? This is Steve Noble talking to Dr. Ivan Spencer. We'll be right back after this. It is an unwritten rule on Call to Action Radio that you do not interrupt the beginning of that song. That's just such a great opening. And is that rugged individualism? Is that hyper-individualism? Well, I suppose you could make a case for that. And that's what we're talking about today here on Call to Action Radio. It is, of course, a Theology Thursday with our friends out here at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. That website is always. So whether you live here in the area where I live in Raleigh, North Carolina, the seminary is located in Wake Forest, which is kind of a suburb of the Raleigh area. Whether you're here or not really doesn't matter. Whether you're a Southern Baptist or not really doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is, do you want to learn more about God's Word? Do you want to sit underneath the teaching of some of the greatest Christian minds that are available to us here in America? And if so, the answer to that, by the way, should be yes. If so, just go to the website. So it's sebts.edu. Throw a / in there, radio, and you're going to land on a page that shows you all these different options and opportunities that you have to kind of dip into the well of wisdom that's out here at Southeastern Baptist, whether you're a full-time student or not. All kinds of things that you can do online. If you happen to be in the area where I live here in Raleigh, North Carolina, there's other things that you can access locally, but a lot that you can do online. Really, really an incredible opportunity. So again, Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, the website is sebts.edu/radio. And that'll land you on the page that you need to get to. We're talking to Dr. Ivan Spencer today, professor of history and philosophy, about this whole notion of hyper-individualism, which then ends up, when we went back 700 years to talk about Occam from Occam's Razor, and nominalism, and now you start to separate faith from reason, and then reason kind of takes off in its own direction. Faith is left over here on the side. And then ultimately, you go through the Enlightenment. It's all about us, baby, which can always go back to human depravity right there in the Garden of Eden. And so that brings us to today, where you have people, Dr. Spencer, like Rachel Dolezal, who was with the NAACP out in Washington, the state of Washington, who, even though she's a Caucasian gal, decides she's a black woman. And that eventually folded in on her, but I don't think that's going to last for long. So you can be transracial. Of course, we redefine what marriage is. We talked about abortion. You decide whether that's actually a life that has merit and worth and value in your belly. And if it isn't, you just get rid of it like you do anything else that's an invasive foreign body inside of yours. And then we do the same thing with marriage. We redefine it based on what we want. And now we're as far as gender. And even for some people, I've seen this guy online many, many times, transspecial.
Yes.
So this is a guy who's gone through all these crazy surgeries, had his nose removed, he has two slits there, had his ears removed, because he's convinced he's a lizard. And that's what he's beginning to look like. And mm-hmm. so that's where we've come.
Yeah.
That this hyper-individualism, you mm-hmm. just redefine whatever, everything.
Yeah. And here's, I don't want to offend anyone, but, you know, we are beginning to look at animals differently and bringing them up to the human level today in a lot of ways. I mean, and so,
right.
You know, this whole idea of speciesism is yet another example of this. So speciesism is this idea that, well, you can be a racist. That's when you are discriminating, you know, against other races. But speciesism is when you're discriminating against other species. So there are some people that are beginning to see and teach that, well, you know, the human species, the human race, as a human beings, are no better than any other animal species. So.
There is a movement out there to yeah. give universal human rights to animals.
Yes. Yeah.
They're like anti-zoo people.
Yeah.
And but yeah. it's true. They're yeah. out there.
Right. And so, you know, now values can be completely defined by groups, whoever has the power to define values, and individuals can define values, and there are no transcendent values. There are no universal values. And so this is one of the reasons why it could lead, or I would say it already has yeah. led to nihilism.
Yeah.
That is that there really are no values. They're just whatever you make up, and if you have the power to enforce, then that becomes a reality.
Yeah, I mentioned this to you earlier. I do this with the high school homeschoolers that I teach, both a Constitution and civics class as well as a Christian ethics class. And we're talking about this notion of a universal truth, that there is a meta-narrative, an overarching story, and that there's moral absolutes because we have a moral God and a moral lawgiver. And so if you don't want to live that way, imagine I snap my finger just like I did. And wherever people are listening to us right now, I just eliminated all traffic indication. So traffic lights are gone. Stop signs are gone. Yield signs are gone. You mentioned this earlier. The school zone, that's gone. Dog crossing, cow crossing, whatever, those are all gone. Even the lines on the road, the yellow lines, the white lines, the lane markings, all that stuff is gone. Because yes. all of a sudden, it is the rule is whatever you want it to be.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, the guy in the smart car is not so smart.
Yeah.
Right, he's toast. Mm-hmm. The guy in the F-150 is doing better, but the guy in the F-250 is doing even better. The guy in the Humvee is doing even better than that. The guy in the big dump truck is doing pretty good. The 18-wheeler, he's really kicking yeah. butt. And now that kind of anarchy, which I think is where we are, that just opens the door to just power.
Yeah,
power takes over.
Yeah, I've actually been somewhere where it was like that in Africa. There's only one traffic rule. He who has the biggest truck makes the rules.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
And I think we see that all over the place right now.
Yeah. And so, yeah, that would be, you know, I would be headed home is where I would go, if that was happening.
Get into hiding.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, nominalism is going to be this movement that is going to take root. You know, its DNA starts back there about 700 years ago. But it's also going to feed into some other movements like the Renaissance and humanism. And then it's also going to have an effect on the Protestant Reformation. Luther himself was a nominalist. But, of course, nominalism had not gone as far as, you know, as we are today with this absolute denial of any transcendent values or transcendent natures or anything yeah, like that.
Yeah.
So. But anyway, there was a healthy individualism, as you mentioned before. We used to have a kind of a rugged individualism yeah. here.
Hey, viva la liberty. I'd say, hey, go make your way.
Right.
You know, and I'm still for that as long as you counter it, knowing what human depravity is and sin nature, as long as you counter it with love for neighbor and respect for neighbor. Yeah. But that requires an overarching truth. An yeah. overarching moral norm has to be there. Otherwise, we get what we're getting now.
Right. So one of the things is like, is there any actionable knowledge here today or anything that we can talk about? What could we do? Well, I think we need to pull back. Obviously, Christians are probably already, you know, looking sideways at some of these movements and, you know, kind of giving them the evil eye and everything. But, you know, move back. We need to, the pendulum needs to swing back away from this radical individualism and move back to the idea that there are some transcendent values. And those transcendent values are not things that I can determine as an individual. You know, they're not up to me, okay? And so, and it's not just moral values. It goes to the nature of things. And so hopefully we will just have a pendulum swing back and there won't be some kind of a, you know, unraveling anarchical type of situation.
Have you seen this kind of hyper-individualism inside the church itself?
Well, I mean, you know, cultural movements don't stop at the door of the church. They walk right in.
That's okay, for sure.
You know, with the people, because the people probably don't know that they're, you know, infected with these ideas, and they bring them right in. And so, yes, I think that individualism has gone too far there as well. Maybe, you know, maybe not as bad as what we see on some of these university campuses and other, you know, these extreme examples that we've brought up here. But nevertheless, we are an extremely individualistic culture. And like I said, some of the individualistic urges that we have are, you know, somewhat innocent. But nevertheless, our technology does that we have, that we all enjoy, you know, from our smartphones, our computers, or, you know, we do have the ability to give great individual expression to ourselves. And I think some of that is healthy itself. But we also know that all these technologies that we have, they too have unintended consequences. You know, like we're just 10 years into this, you know, the smartphone, really. I mean, what is the iPhone?
Isn't that amazing? 10 years.
Yeah, the iPhone's 10 years old now, but it already seems like an ancient, you know, it's been around forever. But we're all noticing how, you know, the smartphone has changed us.
Yeah.
You know, and especially the younger generations that grew up with it had a deeper impact upon them. And so, you know, we want to text and drive. We want to use our technology at all times.
Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, you create your own reality.
Right.
Meaning, I'm going to show you what I want you to believe, what is true about me and my life.
Right.
So it's like this crazy, stupid highlight reel.
Yeah.
And I was like, am I the only one on Facebook for New Year's Eve that wasn't at some extravagant party in some beautiful part of the world? And the fact that I was in my PJs and a T-shirt at midnight and asleep by 12:30, well, everybody else is at a party, and everybody else is apparently in Fiji or Hawaii.
Right.
But we create this alternate reality that isn't even real.
That's right. Yeah, we craft images of ourselves to portray. And only put out the pretty side of things.
Do you see a movement afoot right now, Ivan, where there is some, especially by Christians, because we're the ones that know where the truth comes from and know what the truth is. Do you see a movement that's kind of pulling the pendulum back? We're going to talk about that in the final segment. And then what can we do about it? How do we engage? How do we kind of play our role in bringing our society back from this hyper-individualism that wants to put every single fact on the table, make it all negotiable? So if somebody says, hey, there's no such thing as absolute truth, just turn around and ask them, is that statement absolutely true? This is Steve Noble with Ivan Spencer. We'll be right back.
So what are we waiting for? A message in the sky.
Steve Noble, it's Call to Action Radio Theology Thursday with our friends at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary out here on campus in the beautiful area of Wake Forest, North Carolina, which is right near Raleigh. And we have the pleasure of doing this every Thursday, and we've been doing it for almost 4 years now. So it's been a great blessing for me personally, for the audience, for Southeastern. It's really been a great experience over all these years. And today, talking to Dr. Ivan Spencer, who's a professor of history and philosophy, we're talking about this kind of notion of hyper-individualism, which has led us to redefining all the terms, whether it's life in the womb, life in general, who's got the say over what, and we talk about being transracial, transspecial, trans this, trans that. We redefine everything all the time. That's what hyper-individualism leads to. We started talking about, you go back 700 years into Occam, and you said, well, okay, this is not anything new, and it was an unintended consequence as we separated kind of faith from reason. And today, really, we're talking about ideology. So this hyper-individualism, so let me just turn the corner right quick because I got to make sure I remember our friends at MediShare. One area where that doesn't apply is when the body of Christ takes care of each other, okay? So that's not about hyper-individualism. That's like Acts chapter 1 and 2 and forward. MediShare, really cool ministry that's been around since 1993. I think there's about 275,000 Christians now in the country sharing each other's major medical expenses. They've shared over $1 billion since 1993. And that is not hyper-individualism. That's taking care of your brothers and sisters in Christ as they also work to take care of you. 855-BIBLE-11 is their phone number, as always. 855-BIBLE-11, now available in Montana. So please give them a call and check it out for yourself. So we've kind of brought it into the modern era, Ivan, as we've looked around and see us kind of redefining all the terms. There's no absolute truth. And so now we're just in a situation where I think we have moral anarchy. We don't even have I think reason is now anarchy. Now, 'cause reason would imply that there's some absolute truths out there.
Yeah.
And we have whole movements now that would say, no. There's no absolute truth.
Right. Absolutely. No truth. Yeah.
And so we see that. But how long can it sustain itself? We talked about this before the last break. You know, you've got the homosexual community is now having some problems with the transgendered community because all these definitions start to fold in on each other.
Right.
Can we sustain this much longer?
Well, I don't think it's sustainable. And I think, you know, either the culture pulls back and begins to embrace some of the, you know, the ideas of transcendent values, or it winds up in some type unraveling and leading into some type of an anarchy or some other really undesirable, ugly consequence. But one of the questions that we can ask as Christians is, how can we insulate ourselves from this? How can, you know, in other words, what would be a healthy response? And so you mentioned a couple of apologists during the break. And so one of the things that Christian philosophers and usually apologists are trying to do is to try to reunify the faith and reason.
Yeah.
And not to keep them so divorced. Throughout the early 20th century, many evangelical fundamentalists were complicit with and welcomed a kind of divorce between faith and reason. We became anti-intellectual. We rejected the world of reason, kind of set ourselves over in opposition to it. And now we've entered into a period where faith and reason are kind of hostile to each other. And so is there a way we can head back towards a kind of integration of faith and reason and reverse it? And I don't know that the culture will ever fully do that again, but at least in our own minds and our own thinking as Christians, I think we need to recover the idea that all truth is God's truth, the truths of the world of reason, and that is all the truths that we find through the human exploration of this world, this physical world. And so we're not hostile to science. And so trying to reconcile that, recognizing that all the truths of the world of reason, they are compatible with and they do not conflict with the world of faith.
And I think, you know, inside the body of Christ, and I've seen this with, you know, I was the MC of a apologetics conference here in town just on Sunday, and James Walker was there, who was a fourth generation Mormon, a great apologist, and Frank Turek, who's wonderful. And the thing that happens, I think, so I'm chiding everybody to go get involved with apologetics, because the first thing that happens, at least it's the first thing that happened for me, is it kind of energized the intellectual side of my relationship with Christ and my life as a Christian.
That's great.
I was going, hold on a second. What? So this actually makes sense? So I don't have to just have faith. I can actually engage my mind and my intellect, which came from God in the first place. And now all of a sudden I find that my own faith is getting stronger because it makes more sense to me as I look at the world around me. And then as you begin to think more along those lines, the ability to engage others who don't think that way becomes much more natural. And you're trying to help people see logic and reason. I'm not asking them to believe in some purple spaghetti monster that lives on the other side of the moon. I'm asking them to believe in a faith that is reasonable and rational and explainable.
Yes, and that corresponds to what we see in the world around us and is coherent. And so before Occam, there were two chief movements, two chief, if you will, models within the Christian world. One was an Augustinian model, and the other one was a Thomistic model of unifying faith and reason. But with Occam, both of those were kind of exploded, and out of it comes the modern world, and then the postmodern world, and this mess that we're in now. And so it's really, and Occam never intended that. But what he did was he disintegrated and brought about a divorce between faith and reason.
Yeah.
And there have been many chapters of that along the way, but evangelicals have unwittingly bought into that far too long, and I think it's time for us to pull back now that we're seeing some of the insanity in our culture and try to find ways to reunify. And apologetics is a great way to do that.
Well, you teach out here at, you know, we have the seminary, of course, but we also have the college at Southeastern, which is an undergraduate college, so you're dealing with 18 to 21-year-olds as well. What are you seeing? And then they're kind of the youngest of the millennial generation, but what are you seeing in them in terms of this whole notion of this kind of hyper-individualism and casting off all truth and reason? Are they learning? Do they get it? Do they see it?
I think they're very open to what we're talking about here, and they see some of the chaotic things as well. And a lot of them, at least within our circles here around Southeastern Christian circles, a lot of them are, they see the light, and they're listening, and they are open to beginning to reunify faith and reason and begin to see the world as, you know, this whole world is God's world, including the world of science, the world of reason. And it does not conflict with Scripture.
Yeah.
And so there's hope.
Yeah. What are some of the bright spots that you see today, Spencer, as somebody not just teaching here at a seminary, but looking around the evangelical world and here in our context in the United States? Are there some bright spots that you're seeing in terms of where evangelicals are advancing? We talked about apologetics and people like Ravi Zacharias and Frank Turek, but any other areas where you see it kind of moving forward?
That's a really good question. I know that, you know, the whole concept of cultural engagement and so forth is, that's a buzzword in Christian circles now. How can we engage our culture and so forth? And we do need to start thinking about ways that we can engage the culture. But usually what that means, how can we begin to move the culture? But to do that, it means we are going to have to find areas of our culture and dominate them in the sense that we have to become excellent at that. And that means things outside the walls of the church. But since this whole world is God's world, that's okay.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that you've abandoned the church or abandoned the gospel or anything like that. It's kind of like, you know, Dr. Ashford has mentioned, you know, every square inch of this world is God's world.
Yeah.
And we need to go into that culture, into our culture, embody it, and lead it.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. Now you have to get engaged. You have to learn. You have to get equipped in order to lead.
Yes.
And so just in terms of, like, academically, areas of study or even some books that you can think of off the top of your head. I should have had you think about this before I threw this at you. But where would you point people in terms of, okay, I want to get better at dealing with this notion of all things are negotiable, truth is negotiable, and I want to get better at handling that conversation. Where would you point people?
Oh, gosh, there's a lot of books that Christians could read. One of my favorites always is an introductory level book to get people thinking about the whole direction of our culture is The Universe Next Door, James Sire. Wonderful book. Another one, you're going to have to put your thinking hat on for this one, though. It's The Theological Origins of Modernity by Gillespie. A wonderful book, but like I said, a little deeper. And of course, my book, The Tweetable Nietzsche, is one that I wrote. Yes, it seems to focus on Nietzsche, but I'm kind of using him as a case study for some of the things that have happened in this world and begin to help people to understand.
Well, you see Nietzsche's philosophy all over the place.
Yeah, yeah, and people don't even know where it came from. And
right.
So that's why I'm trying to get people's eyes to open there. So, yeah, we teach all kinds of courses here, you know, introductory philosophy courses, apologetics courses, Christian philosophy courses, history of ideas. And all of these are trying to help our students make the connection, connect the dots with their culture in some way or another, and to begin to reunify both of these realms, the realm of human reason and the realm of divine faith. And there's plenty of avenues for study. Some of those apologists, William Lane Craig's stuff, I always like his materials. It's, again, you're going to put your thinking cap on to read that.
Yeah. But in the end, I mean, to close on a gospel-centered part, the lost person, you know, spiritual truths are spiritually discerned. So those are spiritual truths, but regular truth is also discernible. So that's where you can engage people on an intellectual level that's not even a spiritual level, but you engage them intellectually. But ultimately, what sets people free to see the truth is the gospel itself. So we can go reason all day long, but if we're not sharing the gospel with people,
right,
it's not going to get us across the ultimate finish line.
That's true. It's a both and.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
For far too long, I think we've seen it as either or.
Yeah.
So we need to head back to the both and.
Yeah, both and. What a great point to close on. Dr. Ivan Spencer, always great to have you on. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Okay, friends, this is Steve Noble. It is Call to Action Radio, another great Theology Thursday. I'll be back tomorrow, and then I won't be back for a couple weeks, but I'll explain that to you tomorrow. This is Steve Noble. It is Call to Action Radio. And God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon.